Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Network. The World Transformed is an audio production of Speculist Media. You can find us online at worldtransformed.com. This program explores a convergence of emerging technologies and emerging possibilities which are at the heart of this, the greatest period of transformation in human history. Our world is changing in ways that are difficult to predict, sometimes even difficult to imagine. The World Transformed is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. We're not here so much to tell you about the future as we are to encourage you to think about your future and to consider what may be the biggest transformation of them all, the one that will occur in your life, in your world, the one that begins with recognizing and acting on the vast possibilities that are unfolding before you and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does that amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
How are you?
Well, I'm super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
I am doing great also. We got an interesting show tonight. This is one of those shows, Phil, that, we may have bitten off more than we can chew with this deal. What do you think? I mean, are we going to be able to get through 100 isms tonight?
You know, usually when we have even like five topics, we're hard-pressed to make it all fit in an hour. So
that's
here we have 100 topics, but it's okay because I stretched the show to 90 minutes. So
okay,
see it shouldn't be no problem.
We ought to be able to do about 7 topics then. Right?
We could do as many as 10. Well, here's the deal, ladies and gentlemen. Here's the deal, friends. Here's what we're going to do tonight. We're not going to have the kind of in-depth discussion of every single ism on our list that we would. The topics that we typically engage on the show. We're going to hit a few of them that I think probably are worth spending a few minutes talking about the future of them. And the rest of them we'll just kind of give an up or a down vote. Is this going to be more important in the future or less? Or will it matter at all? Or will it be like supremely important? So we'll make that quick evaluation, and only if there's disagreement will we even linger at all. And I think if we do that, and we don't spend too long on, say, you know, cosmotheism, for example, one of our 100. Then we should be okay. We were just talking about anti-disestablishmentarianism before the show started, and that one actually someone on Facebook had asked me about whether we were going to do that one, and I said it did not make the cut. It was actually on one of the lists, and I cut it out because I actually started with a list of 234 isms. And then I added to that list from other sources, and finally cut it down to 100. And Stephen, you've made some additions here as well, and it still doesn't even come close to all the isms that we possibly could discuss. It turns out there's a lot of isms in the world. Some of them are religious, some are philosophical, some are political, some are artistic, which is interesting. There are schools of art that are that fall under the name ism. And I thought that it was a good hook for talking about the kinds of ideas that we get devoted to, perhaps overly devoted to, perhaps that we spend too much of our attention on. And related to that, I think you've got an interesting quote to kind of get us started.
Yeah. You know, getting too bogged down in an ism. We've got a warning against that from Ferris Bueller. He says, not that I condone fascism or any ism for that matter. Isms, in my opinion, are not good. A person should not believe in an ism. He should believe in himself. So So, with that to kick us off, you know, not to get too bogged down in any one thing, because, you know, isms have been the sort of thing that people have gone to war over. And so, you know, keep an open mind ism out the new ism we start.
Yes, exactly. We'll see if there isn't an open minded.
Ken in the chat room says, that come close to that. We'll probably mention that. So.
Ken in the chat room is wishing us a happy ism. So thanks, Ken. Appreciate that. We're going to be awfully tired of that in 85 minutes. I can guarantee the sounds ism are going to get very old, I think. But I think that what's interesting about that Ferris Bueller quote and the times we live in is that we live in a very ideological age. We live in an age where I think that technology, if it has enabled anything, it has enabled a greater polarization of ideology. And it's kind of become the age of the ism, kind of this is sort of the triumph of the ism is the age we live in. And I think there are isms I like a lot. Optimism is a tag for every episode of The World Transformed. We never do a show that isn't labeled with the tag optimism. So, you know, that's obviously one of my faves, and we'll be getting to it before the night's through. But I think the interesting question is, what's going to happen? You know, what's going to happen with the way people think? Are we going to remain attached to these ideas? And are the ideas we remain attached to, this is kind of the other way of looking at that question, are they going to remain the same? Or are they going to become something else? So that's kind of our marching orders. And I guess we should just jump in and start talking some isms, ground rules.
In fact, I absolutely we should jump in. And the first one is absolutism. Am I pronouncing it correctly, Phil? It's absolutism.
Sounds right to me.
Absolutism.
Yep.
Okay, absolutism. That is the doctrine of government by a single absolute ruler, autocracy. You know,
absolutism. So what do you think? What kind of future does absolutism have?
Well, you know, if you like your sci-fi dystopian, then it's got a great future. If you're more optimistic, like you and I are, Phil, then I'm going to vote it down, and I imagine you will as well.
I'm going to say that the trend is against absolutism, unless we have hard takeoff singularity where the AIs don't much care for us. We don't end up with absolutism. Seems very unlikely to me. Okay, next one: asceticism, abstinence from various worldly pleasures, often with the aim of pursuing religious and spiritual goals. By the way, I should put a link up on where we're getting these definitions. There was one site that had just like hundreds of isms, and we're using their shorthand for those. You know what? This is not an ism that's terribly popular these days, and
yeah.
I think we'll see a new kind of it. I think we'll see a new asceticism in the coming years, where people will relinquish parts of the technological world, or relinquish parts of their ability to upgrade themselves or to experience certain things. Maybe they'll abstain from simuality for a while, or, you know, abstain from virtual reality or those kinds of things, just to have a different kind of perspective. I'm not sure that people are going to necessarily be pursuing religious and spiritual goals, although that might be part of it, but just to have a different perspective, I think people are definitely going to be abstaining from things. Next one, activism. What do you think, Stephen? Future of activism.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think as individual power rises, and the way that happens is through technology, the ability of one person to launch a meme, a worldwide meme, and things like that from something like Facebook or you know, just the internet in general. I think that means that you have the power of the activists grows within our political circles. So yeah, I'm going to vote activism up.
I think so. I think we've entered the age of the activist, that the empowerment of people through technology, through social networks, makes this the era and just the dawn of the era of the activist. I think that and we're seeing it in interesting flavors of it too. You know, things like the WikiLeaks guy, things like Snowden, right? I mean, people taking a particular stand, and because of their connection with the technology where the information is, it's a whole new flavor of activism. But even standard political activism, just along the lines of I want to get the word out, I want to be involved, is hugely empowered, and I think only grows over time. Animism.
Animism. Attribution of soul to inanimate objects. Now, what what I think is interesting about this is we are about to enter a future where inanimate objects will have, in a way, they will become intelligent. We will the world around us is about to wake up, and you know, when you've got computers embedded in everything, is that a new form of animism, Phil, or is that something else?
I think it's a new form. I think that animism is going to come to mean something else. You know, it was just about a year ago we had Colin McInnes on, and we did that show called Bringing Dead Matter to Life, the very thing you're talking about right there. And in the past, there was a belief in animism, which was to say, to hold the belief that this inanimate object has a spirit, it has a soul. But we're going to be, if not adding souls, if not adding spirits, adding mind to inanimate matter all over the place. So it's going to be a whole new kind of animism. And the next term, anthropomorphism, is the same kind of idea. Anthropomorphism is traditionally the attribution of human qualities to non-human beings, sometimes to God or to God, you know, to the deity. People will say anthropomorphize God, but it can be actually applied to anything that's not human. If you give it human qualities, you're anthropomorphizing it. And I think we'll have a new form of anthropomorphism, which is we're actually going to make parts of the non-human world more human. And we've talked about this, particularly around the technology that we use. I think it's going to be a big one.
Okay.
What about altruism? By the way, these are mostly alphabetical, I should notice, in case people think we're stuck on the A's. We are stuck on the A's, but they're largely alphabetical, although I think I threw a few of them slightly out of order. So in case anyone's keeping track at home and wants to check my alphabetizing, I'll tell you now, I didn't get them all right. Future of altruism. Now, if the objectivists have their way, the Ayn Rand folks have their way, it's on its way out. I'll define altruism as the belief in sacrificing one's own good for the good of others. I believe that this is one that survives into whatever new era we come into, and it remains kind of about the same. I think it's a basic behavior that people rely on, that they uphold as a value, and that they probably don't engage in nearly as much as they believe they do or think they do. I also don't think it's evil the way my big Ayn Rand fan friends would tend to describe it. So I think it's a good thing that it will carry on.
I think it's an excellent thing, and I do believe that it requires some balance. I think a healthy self-interest right alongside altruism within your own mind is not a bad thing.
That's the thing. You don't want absolutism in your altruism.
That's right. You want to have both isms living side by side. Atheism.
Very good.
Very good.
Okay. What's next?
We all know what atheism means. I believe that there is no God. What do you think, Phil? Is that going to be on the march in the future, or is theism going to be the way we go?
Well, atheism is definitely in its heyday right now. If you're gonna look at the trend, you have to say, going forward, we can only imagine that atheism grows in popularity, and it's had quite an uptake over the last few years. It's really kind of interesting how, I don't know, pop culture atheism has become, because it never struck me as something that would attract that kind of a following. Actually, it didn't seem like something that would lend itself to that. I think that atheism and some other isms that we'll be hitting in a while, fundamentalism in particular, we're going to continue to see them. We're going to see new versions of them, and I think we're going to see them probably their harsher, more – well, I hope anyway that we're going to see the more – what's the word I'm looking for? Militant versions toned down somewhat. I think that we're going to probably get tired of being so ideological at some point in the future, and people are going to ease up a bit. I think a lot of the really militant atheism that we see right now is a reaction to a lot of things, it's fueled by emotion, and in many ways it seems antithetical to the whole idea of atheism.
I've got a theory about atheism.
Okay.
I think one of the weaknesses of it as a meme, let's put it that way, are its ability to reproduce itself as a meme. has been that it couldn't really compare with something like a religion that meets once a week. I mean, you're not gonna have a Sunday morning atheistic church service, okay? It just, you know, you just haven't seen that. Well, I think one of the things that the internet has provided is an outlet for like-minded individuals who are atheists to fellowship, okay? And I think that accounts to a large extent for some of the growth of that ism. At any rate, that's atheism.
I think you're right, and you know, it has allowed atheism to adopt really some of the most obnoxious characteristics of religion, which is
get out of my face, atheistic man.
That kind of thing. Do I have to listen to your stuff right now? You know, kind of reaction that we sometimes have to both to religious and to atheistic rhetoric. But I think you're right. I believe that's true. It has been a great enabler for that.
Yeah, when the atheists start riding around on their bicycles and knocking on my doors, that they will carry it too far at that point. Okay, next one is atomism. A belief that the universe consists of small individual particles.
Indivisible particles. What do you think? I think that one has one out, right?
Yeah, I guess so,
I kind of left that one in as a joke.
In the universe, I think we're done with it. I mean, that one has one, and we're done.
How about authoritarianism? Okay, you know, which is this interesting form of government that exists somewhere between a more or less free state and a totalitarian state. I've lived in Malaysia, which some would describe as quasi-authoritarian, and it's right next to Singapore, which people are more comfortable sometimes describing as an authoritarian regime. And I can tell you that it's been a pretty popular form of government in certain parts of the world, in Asia, in Latin America, and I think it's had a pretty good run here in the second half of the second half of the 20th century, and here in the first part of the 21st century. It kind of picked up a lot of slack from totalitarianism as the communist world fell, and for good or for ill, it was sort of the form of government that the U.S. government often backed in other places. We would often back an authoritarian regime in order to further our own interests. Going forward, I don't think it's the way to go. I think that we'll swing one way or the other. I think it's an interesting little middle state that probably doesn't have much of a future. I tend to think that we're going to head in a very very free direction. Ideally, I'm looking for kind of the adhocracy of Cory Doctorow's Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom. But failing that, I think we'll end up in a very rigid, on the other side of authoritarian kind of regime. I don't think it has a big future.
Okay. All right. I will go with that as well, Phil. I think the power of the individual and the ability of individuals to band together to accomplish different things by use of technology will dismantle authoritarianism and other things like totalitarianism. It's just the antithesis of that. And so
I think that the enablement, the greater capability that we're taking on, individual capability, individual empowerment that we're taking on through technology, really makes non-democratic, non-free forms of government harder and harder to maintain over time, and they all start to go away. Okay, how about bioconservatism? You know, it had a little bit of a run probably about a decade ago. Haven't heard too much about it. What do you think, Stephen? Is it due for a comeback, or is it dead?
Well, we might get it in a just slightly different form. We might be find that there is a big push to catalog the DNA of the entire biosphere, and that could be seen as a form of bioconservatism. Are we talking about the same thing? Conserve the bio by putting the DNA away into storage. Your that is a form of conserving, even if.
I like it. Although I would describe what you're calling bioconservationism, as opposed to bioconservatism. To me, bioconservatism is what was that guy's name? Leon Cass. and, you know, no cloning and stuff, right?
Oh,
but,
okay. Sure.
But we should add bioconservationism on there. Well, add an ism, make it 101, you know, since we got so much time tonight.
Okay.
But, I think there's a great future.
I would say cloning is going to be an important it's an important part of the future, and I would think that that form of conservatism is not going to be the future. I see the power in genetically modifying life as just too big of a tool. We're not going to pass on it.
I think we have already been as bioconservative as we're ever going to be. And we are going to be a lot more bioconservationist. I think that's a great concept you've introduced. What about capitalism? What do you think is the future of capitalism, Stephen?
Doctrine of private ownership and free markets. I would tell you that we've recently kind of swung in the opposite direction in this country to some extent. But I mean, again, individual empowerment through technology is a big reason I believe that capitalism is on the upswing. On the long curve, you know, looking into the future, capitalism is on the upswing. So there may be some efforts to modify capitalism, but I think in the long run it wins out. What do you think?
Private ownership and free markets, absolutely. I think that they're going to be the big drivers behind economic growth, because you know what, they've been the big drivers behind economic growth all along. So to argue against capitalism is to argue against economic growth, and I think that's insane. When we get to socialism, I'm not sure that its future is that bleak, oddly enough, and we'll talk about that when we get to it. Although those have been kind of opposed to each other in the past. In the same way that a lot of these definitions are going to change over time, I think that the tension between those two might go away. But we'll come to that when we get back to capitalism. Now we've got catastrophism. I'm sorry, when we get to socialism. Catastrophism, the belief in rapid geological and biological change. You know, this one has kind of...
To some extent, this is proven. We have instances in our planet's history that have been proven. We have proof that catastrophism has been a huge shaper in our world. You know, whether it's the meteor that wiped out the dinosaurs or super volcanoes that nearly wiped us out as a species. We have a world that has been marked with catastrophe. So I believe that particular ism has won out in within the scientific community. Although it sits side by side with a gradualism, I think is what they call it, where you know there's gradual change that also affects life on this planet. We from time to time it's punctuated by catastrophe. So
yeah, I think along with atomism, catastrophism has just won out. I mean, I think the definition of it has probably changed to a belief that big catastrophes are coming. And probably climate change is our best example of that. That there are more and less catastrophic scenarios around that, and some people just kind of wallow in the you know horrendous things that are going to happen. And you know, I don't discount any possibility. I think that there's a wide range of things that might happen along that climate change spectrum, including not very much at all. But there's a bent towards that, right? Some people are just they're really inclined to believe that some big horrible thing is about to happen, and I'm not sure that idea ever goes away. I think that
we're
anticipating
kind of hardwired for that, aren't we, Phil? As a species, we're a little bit hardwired to believe that the worst is right around the bend, and we better prepare for it. I think it may have been a thing that has allowed us to survive as a species. You know, we're always looking over our shoulder and trying to figure out what's going to kill us next. And that's, that may be part of that. And maybe it's a little of that is healthy, but a lot of it, could lead to, paranoia. So, healthy doses of that might be the right amount.
I think so. Okay, now our next one is collectivism. It's followed by communism, and then later we get to socialism. But let's take them all at one fell swoop. We're gonna get
that
three at a time.
Right. Collectivism, doctrine of communal control of means of production. Okay,
and communism is more of that, and socialism it means that the state controls the means of production rather than communal. But you know, what kind of commune are you gonna have other than the state?
They all suffer from the same problem, Phil. They all have the same problem, and that's the tragedy of the commons. If it's controlled by everybody, then there's not one single person that will take the means of production and protect it for his own benefit. You know, because what's the point? If something is owned by everybody, if a field is owned by everybody, you better put all your cows on it and you graze it to down to nothing, because if you don't, then the next guy will. You know, you don't take care of the means of production. You just get all you can because that's the way we are as a species. And so, private property ownership has proven that it's just proven to be more productive because the means of production are taken care of by the person who will benefit from that production.
Yeah, I agree. I think where it begins to work is where we become where the means of production and our ownership of private property aren't as tied to each other as they used to be. Where in particular, if the robots take over, right? The scenario that we always talk about. If ultimately human beings are moved pretty much completely out of the production cycle. You have an interesting question about who owns the robots, and we've talked about this before, whether we'll have a situation where just a very few companies or a very few individuals own everything, or whether that somehow gets parsed out through some means of, you know, distributive economics, through some means of collectivism to the whole population. Obviously, we don't have time to get into that tonight. You know, there's a lot of different models for how that might work. But my point is, once you've hit post-scarcity and once you've hit that level of abundance, that level of things working that way, will probably be, you know, the actual market economy will exist elsewhere, that the property will be information or the property will be individual reputation or something like that. And so the free market will carry on as it always has. In some ways, we'll have a very collectivist distribution of production and of material goods. It won't seem that way to us because we'll never think about it in the way that we don't think about how collectivist it is that we have running water or electricity or interstate highways or something like that. It's just that everything will sort of potentially work that way. But our focus won't be on that. Right now, our economy is really focused on material goods, and so to imagine that we could somehow as you said, Stephen, have everybody own those and own the production of those without it turning into a big mess, a la the tragedy of the commons. That's right. It would never work. But I think there's an inflection point in post-scarcity where it would probably work fine, where we would actually be focused elsewhere. And, you know, I was thinking about that getting ready for this show, and it occurred to me maybe that's why they seem kind of socialist in Star Trek. Right, it's because they have replicators.
Yeah.
You know, they're talking about, well, we don't really care about money. It's like, of course you don't care about money. You got a replicator, right?
Yeah, get off your high horse, replicator owning guy.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yes, we don't need your primitive concept of money. It's like, well, I wouldn't either if I had one of those. Jeez, yeah. So
yeah, Earl Grey hot. Get off, you know, whatever.
So I think that the future will hold both the heyday of capitalism and collectivism. That's my view. It doesn't have to, but it might. There's a lot of individual ways of people.
I think technology brings us the best of both worlds. I think that I've said this before. The dreams of Karl Marx will be delivered by Adam Smith. That's the way I've always thought it. Yeah. So anyway, conservatism.
Well, now, before we hit conservatism, Stephen, we're half an hour in. We're only half, we're not even halfway to where we need to be.
I told you, it didn't happen. But you know what? Let's just cruise on, because the conversation's awesome.
But we're going to pick up the pace here. That's all I'm saying.
All right.
Some of these we're going to have to not spend as much time on. Okay, go ahead. Conservatism. This one we devote as much time as we need to.
Political, maintaining political and social traditions. Okay, so does it survive? Well, you know, I think there's some serious challenges to conservatism in a world where it's changing so rapidly. You know, I've long considered myself a conservative. Certainly right of center in many of my beliefs, if not all. But looking forward, does a lot of that change? I think a lot of things change. But just because, you know, there is a tendency to believe that just because, you know, a certain wisdom is more than 10 years old, then it has not, you know, it's nothing to speak to the future. I discount that, and so I believe that conservatism survives in an altered state in the future. So
I think so too. I agree. I think you said it exactly right. It will have some of the elements that it currently has, and it will have some new elements. In the same way that conservatives today believe a lot of the things that liberals did at one point. You know, I mean, they've adopted some of the values that liberals had at some point, and progressives, liberals have gone on to some other points, but they also believe a lot of the same things they used to believe, right? So
yeah.
I think that change will continue to occur, and just as progressivism and liberalism will continue to evolve along the same lines. Okay, constructivism, belief that knowledge and reality do not have an objective value. I believe that one can't hold up.
That
science wins out over that idea.
I agree, and let's move on.
Okay.
Cosmotheism,
the belief that identifies God with the cosmos.
Yeah. Okay. You know what? I think that this one, this is an alternative, I think, to atheism. For those who just are not ready to give up on God, I think that this is one avenue that that the spiritual, if not religious, might choose to go.
Yeah, and in fact, we have the philosophy / religion of cosmism, originally a Russian set of philosophical ideas. Ben Goetzel is a proponent of it, which is probably what I should have included here rather than cosmotheism. But it takes the theism out, but to your point, Stephen, leaves those other things in, right? It gives people a place to focus without believing in God, but having kind of a transcendent, overarching reality that they relate to in some ways, like the way people have always related to believe in God. I'm trying to say without putting too much into it, but also without seeming to judge it. So it's hard to
understand.
Kind of hard to talk about.
We're trying to be objective about these memes. We're not,
we're not taking sides except for
when we
take
say
sides.
When we say a particularism is going to diminish or go away or be adopted, that's not necessarily our value judgment, is it, Phil? It's more of a just which direction we.
That's where we think things
are
going. Yeah, and I think this one has a big future. I think the cosmism, put it in that term, has a big future. Okay, what about where do we get to?
Creationism.
You know what's interesting to me about this? I don't know that creationism is any bigger now than it ever has been in the past. But you would think from reading, you know, the internet that it's huge, that it's this huge looming thing. I think that probably about the same number of people have always believed this who do. Perhaps they've become a little more vocal. I don't know. But I don't think it gets much bigger.
When we say creationism, are we saying that the belief in that God spoke the world into existence about 6,000 years ago?
Let's do the, what is they call New World creationism, right? And we're talking about the really serious kind, right? Not any variation on it, but the kind people generally mean when they use the term. The stereotypical creation. Put it that way.
I would say that will, you know, it's sort of the vocal atheists. You know, they see creationism lurking everywhere. I would suggest to them that if anything, it's on the wane, and just because a person expresses a belief in God doesn't necessarily mean that they don't want their child to learn about Darwin in school. And so, at any rate, but I think as an ism, it will tend to diminish over time.
Okay, defeatism. It's a loser philosophy.
Therefore it loses.
it shows up once in a while and it goes away again because, you know what, you're never going to build a big movement around defeatism. I'm sorry.
If you're going to get together a group of people that believe this, that's going to be, they're going to believe that their movement is doomed anyway.
Exactly. Yeah.
So why get together and believe
it? I don't give them a lot of confidence. Okay, deism, yeah. Belief in God but rejection of religion. I personally think this one had its big day probably in the 80s. Maybe it comes back. I don't know. But all these people who say, well, I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual, right? Or people who, well, I talk to God every day, but I don't really believe. You know, I think that has been a big thing in the past. I'm not sure it's going to be as big in the future. People will either let go of the God idea altogether, or they'll go ahead and commit and find a religion that that works for them.
I'm surprised you said its heyday was in the 80s. A lot of people identified deism with some of our founding fathers, particularly Thomas
Jefferson.
Excuse me,
it's recent heyday. You're right. Its real day absolutely right, the 18th century. Yeah, that's when it
Enlightenment time, period of time.
In a sense, kind of the atheism of its day, really.
Yeah,
when you think about it.
Yeah, I agree. And I would say this is another alternative to those who choose not to be atheists in the future. Determinism, a doctrine that events are predetermined by preceding events or laws. I would lump this together, Phil, with fatalism. And I would say that it has a limited future. I believe that
I'm going to disagree with you here. I think that there are increasing numbers of people from a purely scientific standpoint who materialists, atheists, who take a very strong deterministic standpoint. They argue in favor of it. And I agree with you that as a philosophy, it's nowhere, right? It's right up there with fatalism. It's like, well, what's the point? Why would we even talk about anything, right? Why would you do anything if that's the case? But intellectually, it seems to be gaining some ground, actually. We've had people on this show kind of argue in favor of determinism, which I find paradoxical. Why would you argue in favor of determinism?
It's a little bit like
you can't change anybody's mind.
What's the purpose of arguing in the favor of determinism? Either I'm going to believe it or not. I liken it a little bit to the Calvinists, believe that only a certain elect few are going to become Christians, and in certain denominations they have a Calvinistic bent to it.
Yeah, predestination.
There's this joke, among those who are not Calvinistic, saying, you know what, the poorest person in the world is? It is the Calvinistic missionary. He's not supported by his church. And so,
there you go.
So determinism, there may be some.
I don't
some
like it. I don't like it, but I actually think it's probably going to become bigger. That's my take on determinism. I think it's going to gain ground. Dualism is listed here as the doctrine the universe is controlled by one good and one evil force. That is one variation of dualism. Another one is the one that we talk about more often here, which distinguishes between mind and brain. That talks about a soul and a body, that kind of dualism, the dualism between the material and the spiritual. And you know what? I think that that one sticks around. I think that the argument between monism and dualism goes on for a very long time to come. I don't think that we resolve, just like our hard problem of consciousness, which
one.
I think goes
that
to this.
That is not an easy one. Yeah,
I think it stays around for a long time. I think that it will increasingly be used as a lot of the people that we associate with use it as an insult. I don't consider it an insult to call someone a dualist. I think, that's another way of looking at the world. But I think it will increasingly be kind of ghettoized and used as an insult. But I don't think it goes away, and I think it hasn't been entirely invalidated yet, so I think it's good that it's still with us. How about egalitarianism? We talked about this a couple of weeks ago when we did the Declaration of Singularity. Belief that humans ought to be equal in rights and privileges takes on a new era in the age of artificial intelligence, doesn't it?
It does, and it is my favorite ism, I believe. I believe that this one is right up there because there are going to be some challenges to it when it is – there's always been challenge. It's always been a challenging idea because we're not all equally gifted in intelligence. We're not all equally gifted physically in any other way. And so looking into the future, that's only going to our differences are only going to be magnified in the future. So yeah, there's some challenges to it, but we ought to be equal in rights and privileges regardless of our gifts. That doesn't mean that we're going to guarantee equality of outcome. It just means that we ought to have an equality of opportunity. And so that's an important one.
How about egotheism, identification of oneself with God? Now, here in our definition, it's God with a capital G. But actually, what I think we see more of is identification of human beings with traditional pagan ideas of God, right? So you got Jason Silva, and he gives this talk about we are gods. I'm actually a member of a group on LinkedIn.
We might as well get good at it. I've heard
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
as gods, we might as well become good at it.
That's what he says, yes. And there's a group I'm a member of on LinkedIn. It says turning into, I don't think I've mentioned this before, turning into gods, and they spell it G-O-D apostrophe S. So, you know, my response to that is, well, I hope when we attain God, we'll learn how to use apostrophes. Or the other response to that is turning into gods what? Right, I think is what we need to do with that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we're way farther from that than we think we are. But the idea, egotheism, I think is an idea you haven't heard much in the past. I think it's going to be a very popular idea going into the future.
Well,
I think that one's gaining ground.
Imagine a virtual reality with yourself. You put yourself in the godhood state in virtual reality. I mean, people already love SimCity, you know, or The Sims or whatever it is, you know, things like that are pretty much you're in the position of God for this little world. And people enjoy that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I can see that idea and philosophy growing in the future.
Absolutely.
Empiricism,
the doctrine that the experience of the senses is the only source of knowledge. Empiricism is very strong today. I mean, it's part of the whole rationalistic, materialistic worldview. I don't think I don't think it holds up. I think it will continue to be important, but probably gets challenged quite a bit in the years to come by other ways of looking at things. Particularly as we move into other substrates and we start having very different ways of looking at the world, and we have new senses, and we're potentially talking with other kinds of intelligence. I think empiricism either is redefined significantly or is challenged in other ways.
I agree completely. I think that the empiricists would argue that the new senses are just part of what we're talking about. But then I would say that does change the idea somewhat. So
yeah, well, yeah, and the thing is, when they start telling us things different than what the old senses told us, and then we go, well, which is the
which reality
empirical
is real?
Truth? Yeah, exactly. Epiphenomenalism. Epiphenomenalism, the doctrine that mental processes are epiphenomena of brain activity. Well, this goes back to dualism. This is actually the same argument from the other side, so we don't actually have to spend much time on it. Look, either consciousness is something that occurs entirely in the brain, or it's not. What's your bet, Stephen? You're a betting man.
Brain.
What do you think?
I put my chips on brain.
I put my chips on brain too, but I'm not 100% convinced. It could work slightly different ways. We had Jim Elvidge on a while back talking about interesting alternatives to that. I've read some stuff recently that suggests possibilities other than that. So I'm convinced. I mean, as close to being convinced that it's all in the brain as I possibly can be. But I'm going to hold out. I'm going to say, you know what? This one is not as settled as people want to think it is.
Okay.
Eternalism, the belief that matter has existed eternally.
I think that this one has lost to the Big Bang Theory.
Yes. You know, that one never had a chance going into this century, really, so it's all over. In fact, you don't even get a eternalism for our universe, even if it's recurring, even if we got big bangs and big crunches going over and over, if we end up that we're in a simulation, right? So eternalism is challenged even in modified forms. Now, how about existentialism, the doctrine of individual human responsibility in an unfathomable universe? You know, it occurred to me as I was reading through these that the singularity becomes like the biggest existential dilemma of them all, right? We've sort of moved the whole question of existence to a new level and put it in the future. So I think existentialism is going to stick around. I think it's going to take on a new flavor based on the fact that we're facing completely new things to be totally baffled and confused about.
Agreed. I'm with you on that one.
All right, next, environmentalism.
To contribute to that. Yeah, environmentalism. Obviously, this is a growing concern. Our ability to modify our world around us has grown. And as our ability to modify the world around us has grown, the sense that, hey, we better do what we can do to preserve that environment, that has grown right along with our power to change the environment. So, there's no point. Put it this way: if you're living in a Stone Age tribe, what purpose would an environmentalist have living in a Stone Age tribe? Not much. But he's right at home in our modern world, where the world itself, the physical world, needs advocates. And so,
right.
That is important. Yeah, but,
we've all become environmentalists. We've talked about how it's one of the attributes of affluence. It's something that societies become increasingly aware of and concerned about as they solve other problems. Once you're up to a certain level of wealth, you're able to say, oh, we really got to focus on the environment. Well, the whole world is getting wealthier. With the advent of post-scarcity, I think we're going to have a much finer, much more honed sense of concern about the environment, and we're going to take a lot better care of the environment than we ever have before. But will we
Absolutely.
Be fanatical about it? What's the future
of fanaticism? I think there's, and just to kind of harp on that just a little bit, there has been a tendency among some environmentalists to be a little bit like watermelons, green on the outside, red on the inside. It is the use of environmentalism to bring about other things like totalitarianism, socialism, or things like that. And so those on the right that have been against environmentalism, I would suggest to those on the left, it's not been because of a desire to have dirty air and dirty water. It's a desire not to be socialist. And so so fanaticism. Moving on to fanaticism, Phil, there's always the possibility of being fanatical about any ism, hence our warning from Ferris Bueller at the beginning of the show.
Yeah, I'm inclined to believe that we're moving away from, ultimately, we're going to move away from being so ideological, and that fanaticism is going to not be as big a problem as it has been in the past. This is mostly just me engaging in wishful thinking. I can't give reasons why I think that's going to be the case, but that's what I hope will happen. I'd like to think that
Let me give a reason why I think that you're right, Phil.
Okay.
There's this idea that it's hard to hate somebody that you know. Once you get to know people you're able to cross ideological barriers once you understand where a person is coming from, where you get to walk around their shoes a little bit. And this world is nothing if not growing smaller. And we can trade ideas with people across the world now. And I think that is not an environment that is well suited to fanaticism. I think that you, as your mind opens to other ideas, then the fanatical elements of certain isms tend to be reduced. So I think there's good reason to be optimistic about that.
Fair enough. Okay. How about fatalism? Gosh, it seems like we always end up on this. There's just no hope. We're always on fatalism.
This is the
philosophical side of determinism, right? Determinism is the scientific view. Fatalism is the philosophical view, right? Determinism says that's just what the way it works. Fatalism says, oh, geez, well, you can't do anything about anything. I think, oddly, counterintuitively, although determinism is going to grow in popularity and going to become a more influential idea, I don't think fatalism has much of a future. I think that the big determinist approach is to just not think about it. They just pretend that it's not the case, rather than give into fatalism, because it's just, you know, it's not a philosophy that's going anywhere, right? You know,
it doesn't create a environment for action, you know, positive or otherwise. And so,
exactly.
You know, it's not conducive to continued growth. And here's the thing. I believe that those communities, those parts of our world that are least fatalistic, will rule. I mean, those areas will become more and more powerful, and the areas that are more prone to fatalism less and less. And the world will seek to become less fatalistic as a result of it. So
all right. Well, you're kind of our resident expert on this next one. So, Stephen, feminism. What do you think?
Feminism. You know what? I think it's there's been a need for feminism in the past. I mean, there's it wasn't that long ago. I mean, about the time we were coming into this world, there were still significant barriers that said that, you know, there's certain things that women can't do and shouldn't do. And, experience has taught us better. And so I think that to the extent that feminism has served as a barrier to cooperation friendship between the sexes, I think that it's time for to move into post-feminism, I guess is what I'm saying.
I think there's probably still a lot of room for it in parts of the world. Speaking in the U.S., that it's probably one of those that has changed significantly over time, and will continue to change. That where it goes and where it takes us and what it's about will probably change somewhat. And there's this growing kind of men's movement now, and you get this kind of masculinism, which is not on our list, but. What we want to avoid is any fanaticism wherein these two things become increasingly antagonistic, because we don't need any more antagonism in the world than we've already had. I, it's funny how these start just flowing off the tongue once you get going, you know. I think you're right. A kind of very pro-woman post-feminism that is not anti-male, right? That is very pro-women, and the same thing on the flip side, which kind of meet in the middle in a kind of a humanism. I think there's plenty of room for those, and I think that's the direction I'd like to see us go. Okay, how about finalism? The belief that an end has or can be reached. I have no finalism regarding our discussion tonight, right? I feel that. No end can be reached. I think this is one that some people are going to hold to, and some people are not going to have much use for. That's the way it is now, and that's the way it will continue to be, pretty much.
I would suggest that those who adopt sort of a finalism, they'll be the guys that are. Are talking about the good old days while the rest of us are enjoying the bright future. I think finalism doesn't have much of a future.
All right. Fortuitism, belief in evolution by chance variation. Well, this is, in other words, evolution, right? I mean, I'm not sure that I suppose there are variations on evolution, but I would say that it's one that, like atomism and some of these others, has pretty much stood the test of time and remains kind of a doctrine. It remains kind of a postulate, just an idea that we assume. How about functionalism? This is an interesting one. The doctrine emphasizing utility and function.
I would suggest, Phil, that as we enter an era of radical abundance, that utility and function are going to be taken as a given, and that we will insist also on beauty. And I think that's part of the success of things like Apple's products. You know, I mean, not only are they extremely useful and functional, but they're also beautiful. And I would suggest to you that functionalism either changes to include the idea of beauty, or it goes away. Because you know, we're just going to insist that our stuff work. And if it doesn't work, then we will adopt what does. But and so that's just a given. It also will have to be beautiful.
Yeah, functionalism becomes an underlying assumption. It's not an ism anymore. It's just you know, of course you have that, right? And it's interesting. It shows the evolution there, because there was a time when you had to make an argument for functionalism, because that was not the most important thing. Whether something worked was less important than whether you were, you know, polite or you know, dressed correctly, or whether you were spiritually in line, or you know, whatever the criteria of the day were, whatever was being laid on something, it wasn't, does this thing work? Does it do what it's supposed to do, right? And we were able to say, you know what? That should be the big thing. That should be the most important thing. So that was a huge step forward. And your point, Stephen.
It's going to be a victim of its own success.
Yeah.
Functionalism has won so much that at this point, other things need to step to the forefront. And I think beauty is a big part of what will be part of it.
All right. So. Very good. All right. Next comes, where are we? Fundamentalism.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we've kind of talked around this a little bit, but I'm of two minds on this, all right? Because generally I think that extremist ideologies are ultimately on the way out. I think that ultimately people educate themselves and they realize that's not a trap that they want to get themselves into. However, they've definitely had a good deal of success over the last couple of decades, and I think the internet has been a big enabler for them. The whole notion of being a little bit more extreme in your thinking is just enabled by the fact that you can always select to be around people who think exactly the way you do, and as you kind of reverberate off each other, your opinions just grow stronger and stronger and stronger. So I think in that sense,
echo chamber. Yeah.
What's it?
An echo chamber, and I've witnessed this. It becomes a contest to see who can be most devout or whatever it is
yep.
that we were talking
yep.
about. And it's not, and I'm going to tell you, it's the biggest buzzkill. When the issue is, well, you know, I don't let my kids watch rated R movies. Well, maybe that's good. That's good. You know, don't let your kids watch rated R movies. That's fine.
Sounds right. Yeah. Sure.
And the next person, well, I don't let my kids watch PG-13 movies. And PG, the next person says PG, the next person G. I don't let my kids watch or participate in anything, and they're locked in a closet.
No, that's right. That's, my kids don't read books. That's right. They never see daylight.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it's a race to nowhere. And I've witnessed it in my own life, and don't care for it. And so I've rejected it.
Well, obviously, you and I are neither one big fans of fundamentalism. But where's it going? Right? Is it going to continue on its current arc? I guess that's the question. Because in some ways, swinging it back to atheism, it's become kind of a fundamentalist doctrine, or at least you know some of its proponents have become kind of fundamentalist in their atheism. And one of the things we were talking about a while back.
Again, there could be a race between those who are atheists to, you know, who can be most, dogmatic in their denunciation of this or that perceived slight against atheist thinking.
You see it everywhere. You see it like on Singularity Network, right? You know, people will they'll get into this thing about I'm, you know, more singularitarian than you are. You know, I mean, there's always this race to the extreme, and I think that it's continually enabled by the technology, but I think there's got to be a turning away from that at some point. And at some point, people go, "No, you know what? This is." They recognize it for what it is, which I think you're exactly right, Stephen. It's just a race to nowhere. That's well put.
It's a race to no fun. There's no fun in fundamentalism. It really isn't. Okay.
There you go. All right. How about futurism? Here's a good one, right?
Yeah.
Futurism has been a growing thing over the last few years. We kind of started doing the speculist at just the right time. People got really interested in the future just at the time we started getting serious about the future, and it seems that there's more interest in it than ever. Do people continue to be interested in the future, do you think, or do we just start sort of living in the future and we don't think about it as much?
It is where we're going to live the rest of our lives, Bill. So
that's true, yes.
A little Ed Wood thrown in there. I believe so, and I think the reason people are interested in the future is because we perceive it to be so different from the present. You know, there was a time 100 years ago that, you know, you could live your entire lifetime and wouldn't see much change from the moment you're born until the moment you're laying down on your deathbed. That is not the world we're in now. You know, things are changing so much that you know we need as people to be prepared for what's the next big thing. How do I adapt my thinking to what's about around the bend next? How do I need to educate myself? That's not just for the eggheads to concern themselves with anymore. All of us are futurists now.
Absolutely. The change is occurring so rapidly. We're getting so much more future than we used to, I think is another way of saying what you just said, right? You got to be a futurist. Okay, how about Gnosticism? Now, this is not necessarily the religious take on Gnosticism. This is belief that freedom derives solely from knowledge. So this is an interesting kind of take on Gnosticism. What do you think?
I believe that if you're ignorant, then, you know, what's the old phrase? Ignorance of history means that you are doomed to repeat it.
Doomed to repeat it, yes.
Yeah, so that's just one aspect of not being free. If you are going to if you're going to be ignorant because and lack the knowledge of how to avoid problems, how people, you know, the problems that people have faced in the past, let's say, then you are not going to be free from experiencing that same thing again. I would say that Gnosticism, at least as defined here, freedom deriving solely from knowledge, I think it has a future. Freedom also derives from other things like physical safety. There's a freedom from want. You know where your next meal is coming from. Those sort of things.
It seems like those are all factors too, aren't they? Really.
Those
could all be tied back to knowledge, I suppose.
Yeah, if you're knowledgeable enough, you'll know how to feed yourself. You'll know how to avoid problems. So, I see a future as in Gnosticism as defined there. So,
all right. Next we're going to talk about gradualism. There it is, right? You mentioned it earlier. It's the opposite of catastrophism. I'm getting tongue-tied. We've hit on so many of these. The belief that things proceed by degrees, and I think you said it exactly right, that there's just balance between those two ideas. There has been in the past, and there will continue to be.
Our world changes both slowly and quickly. You know, there are times we've seen both in the history of our planet, and our lives are affected by both. So, yeah, there's room for both. Hedonism is next. The belief that pleasure is the highest good in a world that includes virtual reality, where we can all have our own brothel or whatever. Is anybody going to be anything but a hedonist?
I don't know. I think some people will be other than hedonists, but hedonism has taken on an interesting intellectual dimension over the last decade or so. We had David Pearce on a while back, and he's the author of The Hedonistic Imperative. The idea that really what we should be doing as a species is trying to work things out so that everybody is not in pain and that they're all feeling good all the time. So I think as a philosophical proposition, hedonism has got a big future. I think that it will be hotly pursued. It always has been, but we're just going to get better at it now, right? So people who have, to your point, Stephen, holodecks, right? People who have the ability to experience that much pleasure are bound to get a little more philosophical about the whole thing. It's just,
it'll come down to the individual, Phil. I mean, it comes down to how do you define a good life? Does a good life mean just pursuit of pleasure? And, you know, there's a lot to be said for pleasure. It's it's pleasurable. But, you know, does your life have any meaning beyond that? What have you accomplished? What have you contributed? I think that there's room for balance between hedonism and whatever ism means to go after and to actually do something productive in this world. So
sure, but we're just talking about whether it's got a future, and I think it's got a big one.
Yeah, okay, I would say.
How about holism? Holism, the doctrine that parts of anything must be understood in relation to the whole. And I'm going to add to that one. There's also the belief that phenomena in the universe, particularly things that are studied in science, scientific phenomena, need to be understood from a holistic standpoint. This is the doctrine that's outlined by Rupert Sheldrake in his book. I can't remember the title of the book now. I'd referred to it a couple of weeks ago. I read it recently, and it's quite interesting reading. Idea that we maybe have particulated things too much, that we've broken things down,
yeah,
and maybe we're too much the atomists and not enough the holists. I think that this philosophy probably has a bit of a run ahead of it. I think that it's probably going to come around. Atomism is going to get hit by this one fairly hard in the future, and there's going to be an interesting debate between the two.
Well, you know, it's the opposite also of reductionism. There's been so much good in science that's come of breaking down things into the smallest parts and figuring out how these small parts work. But I think that we've got to now put it back together. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Now that we've got DNA and some understanding of how that works, we need to see, you know, we need to have a better understanding of how the entire body now works with that. And so, yeah, so I agree completely that holism is going to be important going forward. It's got a future. Humanism, and this is a big deal. Belief that human interests and mind are paramount. I would say that that the history of the Western world has been one of a gradual and slow triumph of humanism. What's your thought on that, Phil?
I agree. I think that probably the 20th century was the big high water mark for humanism. People have kind of moved away from it. I think that there's more of a materialism, and there's just some of these other ideologies, I think, have probably taken sway over humanism for a lot of people. And I think it's interesting that transhumanism, which we'll get to, I guess, on the next time we do this show, when it won't be tonight, is sort of pitted against humanism sometimes. To me, I don't see them as I don't see them as opposite.
No,
I don't see them as apart from each other. I see one as the extension of the other, or the completion of the other. But I think that humanism maybe takes a bit of a beating going into the next few decades. I think it's hit its high water mark and will probably have to be rediscovered at some point. Unfortunately, speaking as someone who holds it in pretty high esteem and thinks that it's probably a pretty good way of looking at things.
Yeah. Humanitarianism, the doctrine that the highest moral obligation is to improve human welfare. I think that there's a grand future for humanitarianism. I believe that things like social networks are going to create opportunities for people to be humanitarians in ways that were never possible before, to reach out to one another and help each other. I see that as having a great future going forward.
I think humanitarianism has a fantastic future, and I think it's important to note, we talked about hedonism just a few minutes ago, that there's a strong humanitarian streak within this kind of modern transhumanist view of hedonism. That it's viewed kind of in a humanitarian sort of a way. It's viewed in a we're looking to reduce pain and increase pleasure for everyone across the board. So it's almost kind of a for those who buy into the hedonistic imperative, that's kind of the ultimate statement of humanitarianism. It's the idea of eliminating everybody's pain and fixing everybody's problem. But whether you take that huge sweeping view, or whether you just say, okay, yes, I'm now in a position where I can do something to help this one person over here that I wouldn't have known about before or wouldn't have been able to help before, and I'm going to do that. It's all good, right? Whether you're taking on the global challenge or whether you're taking on the individual challenge. And I think, Stephen, to your point, that a lot more people are going to be taking on a lot more individual challenges, and that's going to sum up towards fixing a lot of global challenges. Okay, how about idealism, the belief that our experiences of the world consist of ideas? I don't think that's a correct definition of idealism. To me, idealism has to do with like Platonic ideals. In other words, a belief in ideals that exist outside of the nature that we currently experience.
Things like justice, love,
right.
Mercy, things like that.
Beauty,
These are things that we strive towards in order to be better people. And it could be a form of moralism. Yes, I agree that this definition is not particularly good. I believe idealism, as we are talking about, continues to have a future, and that people will continue to be idealists going forward. So
I hope so. Yeah. I hope so. I think that it's idealism has had a rough time, maybe over the last few decades, it'll be very interesting to see going forward whether people are willing to adopt the notion of ideals or ready to hold them up as something to look to. I kind of think we need that. I think it's kind of built into us that we have those concepts, and so that probably eventually people will come back to it. But I don't know, it's not guaranteed. But you can see what side I'm on there, for sure. Here's one. Illuminism, belief in an inward spiritual light. I'm not sure how this one stayed on. This one seems rather obscure to me. But I would say that there have been a lot of people who have believed in that up to now and will be a lot of people who believe in that in the future. Can we say that and leave it at that?
I'm reminded of a Yoda quote. Luminous beings are we.
Oh, they're
not
very good, yes.
Not this crude stuff.
Not this crude stuff. That's right, yes.
I think to the extent that people will continue to be spiritual, I think that this ism survives. Okay, illusionism, the belief that the external world is a simulation.
I rewrote that one. It actually said illusion, and I added the word simulation to give it a
simulation.
Modern...
Yeah, maybe that should be simulationism that we're using.
Exactly. It should be.
Yeah, a belief that the eternal world is an illusion or simulation. Obviously, the idea that simulation, that the universe is a simulation has grown among some transhumanists, especially. There are some reasons to believe it. Our universe is pixelated at the lowest levels. There's the Planck length. You can't divide. You can't divide a unit of measure that can't be divided after a certain point, a unit of time that can't be divided at a certain point, the Planck time.
I mentioned Jim Elvidge before. Last time we had him on the show, we went through a whole bunch of these. We went through a whole long list of these reasons to think
things
that maybe
we would expect if we were living in a simulation that we actually find
this is a simulation, but it's all consistent with the possibility that it it might be. And I think we'll only find more of those, and that people will become. I think that this one has a bright future. I think that a lot more people are going to believe that we live in a simulation in the future than believe that now. And I think a lot more people believe it now than used to believe it. So. I think this one's on the rise and is likely to continue to arise. It will not be called illusionism, though. It probably will be called simulationism. All right. Immoralism, rejection of morality.
Well, I am hopeful that that this one does not have much of a future. Morality is just another way that we as people are able to work together, to get along with one another. It is my respect for you, Phil, and your ideas, for example. If you say something that I believe is completely inane, I don't call you an idiot. I reason with you until you come around to a more sane way of thinking, right?
Exactly.
You might call that just manners, or but I think that's a form of morality. It's the belief that my rights stop at the point that they begin to affect the rights of others, and I believe that's a form of morality. Yeah, another way of looking at it is the golden rule. You know.
I really don't believe that. That it goes anywhere. I'm pretty sure that people will continue to be interested in the notion of right and wrong. Right? That maybe the arguments will change, and attempts to put somebody in the wrong will get a little more strident or something like that. But the core idea that there's a good way to go and there's a way we shouldn't go is, you know, that is just so fundamental to human thought. I just don't see people stepping away from that for any period of time. There's nothing to replace that idea, right? Where do you go if you don't have that? You know,
Well, think about it this way: there's always a way of being moral or not. Okay.
Right.
And you know, and most people define morality as their choices. Okay, I'm moral, and the rest of the world has
right.
a problem. You know, we're the heroes in our own dramas, right?
Yeah.
There's a tendency to do that, and so, you know, those who, for example, are in favor of homosexual marriage, would consider those who have fought against it to be very immoral. You're fighting against the rights of individuals to do something. Whereas those who have long held beliefs that marriage should be between a man and a woman, for example, obviously have a different ideal of morality. Immoralism is saying that, you know, that there is no morality, and quite frankly, that just doesn't even compute. You know, I mean,
I think, you know, another way of describing this would be cynicism. And I don't, you know, there's a certain number of people who will subscribe to a cynical view of the world, maybe who will adopt an immoralist view of the world, but I really think it has been a minority, and it will continue to be a pretty small minority, that people like the idea of being right, if nothing else, right? You know, you know, how can you moralize if you don't believe in morality,
how are we possibly
right?
going to look down on others if we don't?
Idea of morality, exactly.
I'm not saying that all actions obviously are not equal, and I'm not suggesting that immoralism is the right way to go at all. I'm saying it doesn't. It's going to remain a small thing.
You know, okay. I agree. I think that if anything, if there's an upside to the extremism, if there's an upside to the polarization of people, it seems to have made them even more interested in being moral. It's made them nastier about it and more strident about it, but at least the idea of morality has held on. Okay, how about indifferentism, the belief that all religions are equally valid? I've never heard anyone suggest this. I hear people kind of talk around this idea. I think that's a pretty obscure belief and will remain a pretty obscure belief.
I think this is different, obviously, from the belief that all religions should be able to be practiced. Okay.
Oh yeah. No, of course.
You know, yeah. I mean, any egalitarian is going to believe that there should be freedom of religion. You know,
right.
Practice whatever religion you like, but that's a long way from saying that all religions are equally valid. If your religion includes an idea of human sacrifice, I'm sorry, that's not valid.
Yeah, I have a hard time believing anybody really thinks that. You've got to be in a very rarefied spiritual place to be an indifferentist. Okay, how about individualism? Belief that individual interests and rights are paramount. Seems like we talked about this a little bit when we discussed the Declaration of Singularity, too.
I believe that this again, as the power of the individual grows with technology, individualism grows right with it, and so there's a big future for individualism.
I think there is a big big future for individualism, but you know, we talked about collectivism as a system earlier, Now, to contrast it with individualism as an ideology, I think there's a big future for collectivism as an ideology too. I think that those two have been those are the kind of the polar opposites that we've been pushed to, and individualists have become more extreme individualists, and now collectivists, I think, are a little bit more extreme in their collectivism, and not really so much that they're extreme in either of those two positions, but more like extreme in their condemnation of the other side, right? So I think we'll see a lot more collectivist rhetoric, a lot more individualist rhetoric that's not terribly helpful, but the core idea of individualism that, you know, like individual people are important and that they have rights and that they ought to be able to determine their own lives, I hope that idea continues to catch on, because that's like the main thing, right? That is the thing that the world really needs. And the last couple decades have been very promising in that direction. So we can only hope that individualism continues to make the kind of progress that it has.
All right.
How about instrumentalism, doctrine that ideas are instruments of action? Wow. I'm going to say people are not going to care about that one.
Okay, good. Let's move on, because
okay.
I'm not even
intellectualism.
Sure. I'm not even sure how I could speak to that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure nobody cares. Intellectualism, belief that all knowledge is derived from reason. So the opposite would be that you're handed down knowledge divinely, or you're born with it, or something like that.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of a core assumption that we learn things and we reason things out, and that knowledge really doesn't come from much of any other. Well, actually, I take that back. Perhaps some people are more in favor of an intuitive approach to knowledge. Right, and
this is sort of a middle ground, I think, from being passed down knowledge by way of authority, and on one hand, and then scientific method on the far extreme. I think this may be somewhere in the middle, where you can learn things just by reasoning it out in your head. I think that there are some occasions when intellectualism has led to advances. I think experimentation using the scientific method has been more important, at least in the last 500 years or so. So, would you consider intellectualism as separate from the scientific method, or part of it?
No, I think you need it, right? You need it for the scientific method really to work. Yeah. I think it's kind of a core piece for a lot of the rational things that we do, a lot of the rational approaches that we take. So I think it continues to be a major assumption. Maybe it's challenged a little bit by people who are in favor of more intuitive approach to thinking. That would be my only step back from pure intellectualism, I suppose.
Okay. Next is liberalism, the doctrine of social change and tolerance. I would suggest that liberalism, obviously we're about to enter a time of great social change and a need for tolerance. So does that mean that we all become liberals? I think to some extent the answer to that is yes, but I think that it depends on how you define liberalism. It doesn't necessarily mean always, left of center. I think there's a classic liberalism that today's quote conservatives approach in their thinking, what's your thoughts on that, Bill?
Yeah, I agree. I think that when you start talking about things like conservatism and liberalism outside of the current left-right divide, they start to look very different. And who could possibly argue with a doctrine of social change and tolerance, right? I mean, we look at those as assumptions.
We should have no social change.
And nothing's going to change socially. You know, I mean, we just assume that society is going to change, and we assume that people have to be tolerant. It's almost the sort of thing that those words kind of show, that definition kind of shows that that's past being something that people even argue about. So what gets called liberal or conservative doesn't have much to do with those things, I think, anymore.
Yeah, the left-right dichotomy, you know, basically by this definition, every decent person you know, Phil, is a liberal by that
definition. It's a liberal, of course, yeah.
Yeah, you know, everybody believes that there should be social change, obviously for the better, hopefully, and there ought to be tolerance. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I would say that that particular ism, as defined there, has a bright future. And
has a very bright future, indeed.
And,
okay,
yeah.
I think we have time for one more, libertarianism.
Yeah, let's do it. That's a great one.
So the doctrine that personal liberty is the highest value. Now, how does this differentiate from individualism, the belief that individual interests and rights are paramount? Are these almost the same thing, aren't they, or are they?
Almost the same thing. Yeah, they really are. Personal liberty is of the highest value. It is a response, both of these, individualism and libertarianism, is a response to authoritarianism, socialism, whatever centralizing ism, you know, that would concentrate power in a small elite. You know, this says no. I think power should be dispersed among the entire populace. And Phil, I would classify myself as a techno libertarian. I see the world as one that as technology continues to empower the individual, those who would want to centralize power in the hands of a few should step back and relinquish power to the people that are able to do it now for themselves. And so that's
I agree. I'm a big believer in individual liberty. I'm a big believer in personal liberty. However, I've got to say that I stick just a little bit on the question of highest value. You know, and because is that the question? Then is the liberty or the good of the group contested against the good of the individual? Is that kind of the question? The situation around the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. That whole argument, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then there's the response to that was in the next movie: the needs of the one outweigh
the needs of the many. Yeah.
Yeah, so do we go with a Star Trek 2 or Star Trek 3 future? You know, which do we want? I'm going to tell you that I hope for a future where we have the right to do things that are even considered by many to be stupid. And so you see libertarians fighting for things like the right to smoke and stuff like that. You know, I mean,
yeah,
I know it's bad for me. It's terrible for me. But I ought to be able to, I'm an adult, I ought to be able to make decisions that even are stupid. Why should I have to be out here on the stoop in the rain to fire one up? You see libertarians often fighting for things like that. A lot of times they're fighting for things like marijuana and stuff like that. And they've had some success in your home state, Phil.
They have indeed. Well,
yeah,
so I don't know that, you know, whether the group interest is that people don't smoke. I suppose it is. It's the group, you know, and that's where the clash comes into play. I would just say that the way that's phrased, I'm not completely convinced, right? I'm just saying from my personal definition. However, if we're looking at what kind of a future does libertarianism have, I think it has a very bright future, along with individualism, along with collectivism. I think that all of these are going to be manifested in new ways and talked about and continue to be very important. And now we're out of time, Stephen, so I guess maybe not next week, but a week after next, we'll pick this up again, because surely we don't want to do this 2 weeks in a row. Am I right?
I think not. But it's been fun and been a great conversation.
Okay, and so 2 weeks from tonight, we'll do part two of our isms. This is a lot of fun talking about this. Next week, we'll have a brand new show on a different future-related topic. And what's our music, Stephen?
Music tonight is Back Home by Tom Bertram.
Tom Bertram singing Back Home. Well, thanks for putting that together, Stephen. Fun talking to you about 50 isms. Look forward to discussing the other half of our 100 isms in a couple of weeks. Thank you all for being with us, and until next time, live to see it.
Could have made up Iowa. Takes me back to the place I love, the place where everything is good. I just learned another part of me. Hold on tight, someday I will be. And it's the someday I will be.